You're listening to Midlife Side Quest, the over-the-hill gaming podcast. Here's your host, John Wall.
It's July 23rd, 2026, and welcome to episode 192 of Midlife Side Quest, the over-the-hill video game podcast. I am your host, John Wall, and every Thursday morning I bring you 15 minutes of video game impressions, industry news, and tales of a Gen X geek. Thank you very much for tuning into the program today. On this week's episode, I'm going to be talking about the new game, Densha Attack. As always, though, let's kick things off with a look at the news. Following the devastating cuts as part of, let's call it, phase one of Xbox's reset, the developers left behind are starting to speak out about what comes next. Today's story comes from Jordan Midler at VGC. Bethesda Game Studios has confirmed that Obsidian is working on a new Fallout game, Fallout 5 is in pre-production, and that several Fallout remasters are coming. The story says, in a lengthy note published on Friday, the studio revealed what's planned for the future of its biggest games. Quote, "Fallout is one of our biggest priorities today," the note reads. "Fallout 5 remains our long-range destination, and we have multiple Fallout projects in active development right now." A new Fallout 76 expansion was also confirmed, which will serve as a prequel to Fallout 3. The note also confirmed that both Fallout 3 and Fallout New Vegas will receive remasters, as previously reported by VGC. Later on in the note, Bethesda confirmed that Obsidian is working on a new Fallout project. Quote, "The Wasteland continues to expand as we team up once again with our longtime friends at Obsidian Entertainment. We're happy to confirm they're working with us on a new Fallout project. We'll have more to share in the future." Bethesda also confirmed that they will continue to support Starfield and that most of the team is focused right now on getting the next Elder Scrolls game out as soon as possible. All of this seems to fall in line with what Xbox has been saying recently, in that they're going to be doubling down on their most popular franchises like Fallout, Elder Scrolls, Halo, Gears. It remains to be seen how this strategy plays out, though. Can they deliver core games more quickly when they have just cut 3,000 jobs? Will these new games be Xbox exclusive on console now that they've changed course with their multi-platform strategy? And how do they win back players? Obviously, I still have faith in the individual development teams within Xbox. These awful cuts and changes have come from the corporate level, but trust in the Xbox brand has probably never been lower than it is right now. There are loads of games these days that try to evoke a certain era of gaming. Shovel Knight and Axiom Verge, you know, feel like they're NES games. The upcoming Agent 64 and El Paso Elsewhere, you know, are going for that PS1 or N64 vibe. And Densha Attack from developer Undercoders definitely feels like the kind of niche Sega Dreamcast game that I probably would have fallen in love with back in 2000. It's got the visual and musical style of Jet Grind Radio, the breakneck speed of Crazy Taxi with a dash of Sonic Adventure, and maybe a hint of Tony Hawk. All that's really missing is a cool little VMU minigame. So the game takes place in a future Japan where all of the fancy pants, rich and powerful folks live in these domed cities that they've built for themselves, while everybody else lives outside these walls and has to fend for themselves. You play as Emmy, a young girl who rides around Japan in a train car, and for reasons that are both too silly and inconsequential to remember, you end up combining forces with a bunch of people to master the art of Denshattack and take on the evil corporations running the domed cities. So what is Denshattack? Well, it's basically train races that also involve tricks and super quick reflexes. Like if Thomas the Tank Engine was super into parkour, I guess. As you barrel down the track at supersonic speeds, you'll need to think fast to avoid obstacles and land tricks. If there's an obstacle on the track in front of you, you can flick the stick left or right to switch lanes if there are tracks running parallel to you at the time, or you can slow down with the left trigger and jump with the right trigger because trains can jump, apparently. You can also grind on rails, which kind of works the same way as in Tony Hawk, where you kind of got that meter and you got to keep the bar in the middle. And when you go off of a big jump, you can rotate the analog stick in different directions to do tricks in the air before you land. And as you progress in the game, you'll unlock more and more abilities like wall riding, manuals, and more. There is a lot to learn. There's a lot of moves and controls that they throw at you, but it's not necessarily the amount of moves that make this game tough, that make it tricky. It's the speed at which you race, which means that you have to kind of be able to shut your brain off and get into that, you know, that zen-like state to be able to pull off these moves without really thinking about it. There's also a good amount of variety to the types of races you'll do. In some, you're, you know, just trying to complete a course as fast as possible, while in others, you might be racing against other trains, which you can like sideswipe to knock them off the course. I think my favorite style of race might be the objective-based courses. Here, they'll give you like a list of things to do, again, kind of like in Tony Hawk, and you need to complete that list in as quick a time as possible. You know, it might have destroy 3 statues or hit all of the switches in a level. And once you finish that list, then you hit the brakes to end the race. And because this is an, you know, anime-inspired, post-apocalyptic, extreme train action racing game, there's boss fights, obviously. And before you ask, you know, you mean like faster and harder trains that you've got to race against? No, I mean giant robots that come together Voltron style that you have to attack by launching your train straight into them. Yes, this game is very weird, but it's very cool. And while the gameplay is very fun and exciting, I don't think this game would be half as successful and impactful without the bucket loads of style dripping off of it. The visuals are just, they're bright and exciting and colorful. The characters are cool and fun. And the music just fits the vibe perfectly. And again, it is very reminiscent to me of the Jet Set Radio games. My daughter Sam was watching me, and she watched me do just like a couple of races before she was like, "Dad, you need to let me play this." And she was pretty hooked. If you're a fan of fast-paced, trick-based racing games, especially ones with that, you know, a Dreamcast vibe to it, I think you've got to check this out. It takes a lot of inspiration from other games, but it also has a very unique style of its own. And if nothing else, if I haven't convinced you yet, just go check out a video or a trailer of it on YouTube. I think once you see this thing in action, you're going to be sold. Marvel released the trailer for Avengers Doomsday, which comes out in December. And I gotta say, I was geeking the F out. I know that the post-Endgame era of the MCU has been a bit rough. You know, they were trying to move on from the two biggest stars in their franchise. COVID threw the whole schedule into chaos. They had to pivot from their big villain after Jonathan Majors went off the deep end. And to be honest, the quality of the movie and TV projects has been, it's been hit or miss. But none of that mattered when that trailer started and they showed Thor fighting Dr. Doom and Gambit versus Shang-Chi or the X-Men and the Fantastic Four. These movies are the ultimate high five to 10-year-old me who used to sit on his bed and go through all of his Marvel trading cards and look at all the statistics in the Marvel Universe comic books. And I fully embrace it. Bring on the nostalgia bait. I will consume it wholeheartedly with a smile on my face. Because this kind of stuff brings me so much joy, and I don't care in the slightest, you know, if some people think that it's cringe, or if the world at large has superhero fatigue, that's fine. That's fine. You don't have to like this, but I still absolutely love this stuff. One of the funniest complaints that I've seen from people online is that there are way too many characters to keep track of and that they have to watch a bunch of other movies to follow what's going on and that it's silly that they're bringing back Captain America or Robert Downey Jr. And like, yeah, exactly. Have you ever read a Marvel comic book before? This is what they do. Every year or so, they would roll out some big crossover event like, you know, Age of Apocalypse or Secret Wars or whatever. And I would end up with random issues of X Factor or Nova or something because that's what you needed to do to get the whole story. Creating this giant, complicated, interconnected universe is probably the most true to the comics thing that they could have possibly done. And again, I freaking love it. Thank you for listening to Midlife Side Quest. I appreciate you making time in your day to hang out with me. You can catch a new episode every Thursday morning wherever you listen to podcasts, and you can support the show by subscribing and leaving a review. Until next time, I'm your host, John Wall. Have a great rest of your week, and don't forget to save.